The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Too often, we think of the body as a collection of parts that we can replace as they wear out. It's time to change our view of the body and start thinking of it as an integrated whole. Welcome to Rethinking Orthopedics with your host, Mary J. Rogel. Imagine what might become possible if we think together in a different way about our dynamic and adaptable bodies. Now, here is Mary J. Rogel.
Good evening and welcome to Rethinking Orthopedics. I'm your host, Mary Rogel. Over the last several months, we've been investigating the dynamic, adaptable nature of the musculoskeletal system in vertebrates. And I've been arguing that joints normally operate through a range of alignment possibilities, that problems occur when a joint is restricted by injury so that it can no longer move through its complete range. We've looked at the pelvis as the foundation on which the rest of the body depends for its alignment. We've seen how problems in the sacroiliac joints and the various ligaments of the pelvis affect the motion of the lower extremities, and we've seen how the upper extremities counterbalance alignment problems in the lower extremities. Today, what we're going to do is follow that pathway of adaptability upward from the pelvis through the torso, the rib cage, and the neck, to what I call the end of the line in the head, the jaw, and the teeth. I have illustrations for tonight's show posted on my website so that you can follow along and look at the pictures as I speak. So if you're not already listening to this show from my website, please open a new tab in your browser and go to my website, which is www.eastpointassociates.com. On my homepage, there's a tab called Mary's Radio Show. Click on that tab and then scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page until you see the file that's labeled Illustrations for July 23rd, 2014. Click on the file and a new window will open that has the illustrations that I'll be using during this show. So let me repeat that for you. My website is www.eastpointassociates.com. Click on the tab that says Mary's Radio Show, scroll down to the very bottom, and click on the words Illustrations for July 23rd. So let's start by talking about the torso. Let's consider for a moment what the torso is and what it does for us. Now, I like to think of the torso as a flexible tube. There's a feature of the body that we have not addressed in any of the shows so far, and that's the term fascia. You've probably heard the term plantar fasciitis, but what really is the fascia? Ligaments, tendons, and fascia are what I call the stiff tissue. These are tissues that do not have the same kind of stretch that muscles and the soft tissues of the body have. They have less blood flowing through them, and they're constructed differently. So that's why I call them stiff tissue. The fascia are a thin membranes, and these membranes surround every muscle in the body, every organ in the body. And it's what its function is to allow those muscles and organs to slide against each other without sticking. So it helps us to move. There's a second kind of fascia, and that's the one that I want to focus on right now. That's the fascia that covers our entire bodies. It's under the skin. So we have the skin, and then there's this layer of fascia that, in a way, is kind of like a wetsuit. What it does is it holds us together. It holds all our parts in. And it's this is the fascia that I say creates the flexible tube. What keeps the tube from collapsing is the spine. The spine acts as a kind of a scaffolding for this part of the torso. It prevents the tube from collapsing. It ensures that there's space for our internal organs. And this space that I'm talking about is defined by the pelvis at the bottom, the rib cage at the top. So now let's start looking at our illustrations. If you go to the first page, the first illustration that you'll see is the pelvic girdle. And those of you who've been listening to the show on a regular basis will notice that this is a very familiar illustration. The winged bones at the top are the ilia. We're going to be talking a lot about the ilia today. And between the ilia, the bone that has the two holes that you can see, that is the sacrum. The bones that are sticking out to the front on each side are the femurs. We're going to talk about them too. That's the hip socket that you're looking at. So this is our bottom part of the torso. When you scroll down to the next illustration, we're going to start building on this now. So you see that the pelvis is at the bottom, and the winged bones there, the ilia, those are the iliac crests. And on the iliac crest, what you see is a muscle attached to the top of that. It's called the quadratus lumborum, and it stretches from the iliac crest up to the lowest rib. And on the way up, it attaches to each one of the lumbar vertebrae. The quadratus lumborum is the deepest of the abdominal muscles. Now, there are two other muscles there that we're interested in as well. If you look at the femurs, where the hip socket is, there are two muscles that attach in that general area. One of them we call the iliacus. That's because it attaches onto the inside of the ilia. So the iliacus muscle attaches all on that inside of that pelvic bone there, and it has a tendon that goes down and attaches to the femur. What that means is that when the leg moves, when we move the hip, it moves the pelvis with it, because those two bones are directly connected to each other because of the iliacus muscle. There's a second muscle there, the psoas major. It, again, starts down at the same place where the iliacus attaches onto the femur. And this muscle goes on up to the lumbar spine, and it attaches to each one of the lumbar vertebrae. This muscle, you'll notice, it attaches a little bit to the side of the center. That means that when the leg moves and it pulls on the psoas, it rotates the lumbar spine. So the movement of the hip, the pelvis, and the lumbar spine all happen together. And you can test this out. You can feel it. While you're sitting there, lift up one of your legs. What you'll find is that your pelvis and your lower back also move. And if you try to prevent them from moving, you can feel the strain in those muscles. So let's continue now on to the next illustration. And what we're going to start looking at is the diaphragm. Diaphragm is a very interesting muscle. In the upper illustration on page 2, you'll see that the diaphragm is the only muscle being shown in that diagram. It's in the shape of a dome. And this dome goes pretty high up into the rib cage. It's kind of surprising. The ribs have been cut away so that you can see it a little bit better. In the lower illustration on that page, we're also looking at the diaphragm. And what we're doing is we're looking underneath the bottom of the dome. So we're looking up into the dome from down below. And what I'd like you to notice on here are there are some familiar things. Even though this looks like an odd illustration, you've seen these things in some of the earlier illustrations. If you look at the bottom of the illustration, you see muscles that have been cut away. Well, those are the two muscles we just talked about, the quadratus lumborum and the psoas major. You have them on each side. In the center there is the lumbar spine. And attached to the lumbar spine are two tendons. These two tendons are we're going to be spending some time talking about. So, but I want you to see where they are. One of them comes down and it attaches onto L3, and the other one attaches onto L2. And you'll notice that they're offset from each other and that they're at two different levels of the lumbar spine. Before we move on and talk about those some more, what I'd like to do is focus your attention for a moment on another tendon that's here in the diaphragm. You'll notice the coloring here. There's a darker color and a lighter color. The darker color is the muscle part of the diaphragm. The lighter color that's in the center portion of the dome is the tendon. It's the central tendon in the diaphragm. And what I'd like to call your attention to are the conduits that are coming through, the holes that you see in that central tendon. The one in the back is the aorta. The one above it is the esophagus. The one to the side on the left is the vena cava. And then you'll see that those other little projections coming down, those are blood vessels that feed some of the organs. So this makes a good place for us to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go back to those tendons that attach onto L3 and L2, and we're going to talk about them some more. This is Rethinking Orthopedics. I'm Mary Rogel, and we'll be right back.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
By making some important changes in your life, you can move forward from where you are to where you wish to be. It is becoming the change you want to see. It can be a sort of experiment, if you will. On Moving Forward, Wellness One Step at a Time, your host, Dr. Serena Wadhwa, will introduce you to ideas that can help improve your health, relationships, and finances. You probably have at least one part of your life that needs improving. Make an appointment now to join us every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Explore the power of natural healing with Howard Strauss. Join us each week for an informative program that'll help you learn effective healing methods using natural remedies. Howard's guests include top researchers, authors, and experts who will share their views on a variety of natural products and healing methods that really work. Tune in to The Power of Natural Healing with Howard Strauss, Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
How many times have you heard this?
I'm sick and tired of feeling sick and tired.
You are what you eat.
I've tried every diet.
Diets don't work.
It's time to stop this kind of madness and start thinking and feeling empowered to change your health. Tune in to The Raw Truth with Chef Sharon Fraser. Join us weekly for thought-provoking conversations with world-renowned experts in the food, medical, holistic, sports medicine, chiropractic, and naturopathic health sciences. The Raw Truth airs live every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Rethinking Orthopedics with Mary J. Rogel. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please give us a call at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to rethinkingorthopedics@earthlink.net. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back. You're listening to Rethinking Orthopedics. I'm your host, Mary Rogel. And in this segment, we're going to talk more about the diaphragm and how it is affected by pelvic motion. Where we left off, we were talking about two tendons that come down from the diaphragm and attach onto the lumbar spine. And what I mentioned is that these two tendons are not symmetrical. They're different lengths, and they attach onto different vertebrae. They also are shifted to the two sides. They don't meet in the center. One is on one side and one is on the other side of the center. And I'm interested in these particular tendons because of their asymmetry. Now, yes, I understand that we are all asymmetrical, and that's actually one of the reasons that I want to point out these tendons to you, because out of all the structures in the body, these are the two that are most obviously asymmetrical. And as I said before, yes, we are all asymmetrical. There's a famous social psychology experiment where researchers took pictures of people's faces, and then they divided those photographs in half down the middle and created mirror images of the two sides of people's faces. And it was very interesting because the two halves produced very different pictures of the same person. And I bring this up because my question for you is, what is it that creates this kind of asymmetry? How is it that we come to be asymmetrical in this way? And I think, and this is just an idea, but I think that it's related to these two tendons of the diaphragm. And I want to explain that in this particular segment. Because in earlier episodes, I've been talking about how the body accommodates to injury. And in particular, we've talked about the sacroiliac joints and what happens in the pelvis, in the foundation. In my acupuncture practice, what I see time after time, day after day, patient after patient, is that everybody has almost the same pattern of asymmetry. Yes, there's variation, but it's like variation on a theme. The asymmetry is predictable. And I've been describing that as we go along in the earlier episodes. I think it's predictable because of these two tendons of the diaphragm. So let's look at this a little bit more closely. So if you scroll down to the next illustration, what you'll see is what looks like a somewhat complicated picture, but it's not really that complicated. You've been looking at these at the same picture with things in different pictures. Now they're all together in one illustration. So those winged things in the center of the diagram are the iliac crests, and you see that attached to the iliac crest is a muscle that is coming down and attaching onto the femur. That's our iliacus muscle. There's on the right-hand side, you see there's another muscle that's been cut away. Well, if you look on the left side of the diagram, there is the entire muscle, which is the psoas muscle, going up from the femur to each of the five vertebrae of the lumbar spine. And you see in the center there at the upper part are the two tendons that are coming down from the diaphragm to L3 and L2. The dome part has been cut away, so you don't see what's above it, but those are our two tendons. And then in the back there, stretching from the rib, the lowest rib onto the iliac, that's our quadratus lumborum muscle. So everything is there, and it makes it a little easier now to imagine what happens in here when we walk. Well, when you lift your leg, you can see that it has a direct effect on the pelvis because it pulls on the iliacus. It has a direct effect on the lumbar spine because it pulls on the psoas. When the psoas is pulled, it rotates the lumbar spine. When the pelvis tilts, it pulls on the quadratus lumborum. And the quadratus lumborum, you'll remember, is also attached to the lumbar spine, and it's attached to the ribs. So we begin to see how the motion is transferred upward from the pelvis into the rib cage and into the upper body. So now what happens when there's a problem in the pelvis? Because problems that occur in the lower extremities, problems that occur in the pelvis generally affect the sacroiliac joints, which is in the center of this whole thing that we're looking at right here. So let's imagine that we've got a person standing in front of us and we're behind the person looking at the person's back. And let's assume that there is a problem in the pelvis for this person. The pattern that I see on just about everybody is that the right side of the right sacroiliac joint, if I do that, there's a test that I can do to see whether it's moving or not. And typically what I see is the one on the right doesn't move as often as the one on the left moves. Sometimes neither of them move, but the typical pattern I see is that the one on the right doesn't move. So what does that mean? Remember that the sacroiliac ligaments, that there are three of them in that joint. There's a posterior one in the back. That's the one we can feel when we're doing our test. There's one on the front, and then there's one in the middle between them. So if the one on the right in the back is contracted, to me, that says that the one on the left in the front is also contracted, because remember, the pelvis is bony. It has very few places that it can flex, and it flexes at those sacroiliac joints. So contraction of the sacroiliac ligament on the right creates a counter contraction on the left in the front, because we're three-dimensional and we have to move in three dimensions. With this kind of torquing in the pelvis, the right ilium usually moves backward, and you can see the ilium is attached to the quadratus lumborum, to the rib cage. That means that when that pulls backward, it's going to have an effect on those ribs. And we saw in an earlier show that there's another muscle that attaches onto the iliac crest. It's the latissimus dorsi. And the latissimus dorsi attaches to the arm, to the upper arm, which means that when you move the pelvis, when the iliac moves, it pulls not only on the rib cage, it also pulls on the arm. And it pulls on it in a particular way so that the elbow gets pulled backward and the head of the humerus, the shoulder, moves forward. That would be on the right side. The counter activity on the left side, the counter movement on the other side, is for the left leg and the left arm to internally rotate. And if you can imagine or stand up and walk and see how your body normally moves when you walk, you see that it alternates on the two sides and that the arms move in concert with the legs. So the problem comes in when there's an injury and the body cannot move fully through that whole range of motion on both sides. It's this variation, it's this injury that creates the variation I see in the pattern, even though the pattern's the same. How it gets expressed depends on what kind of injuries are there, how many injuries are there, how long the injury's been in place. Because the longer the injury's been in place, the less movement we're going to get through the real range of motion. And that's why this person standing in front of us is not standing in a neutral position. The injury creates the torquing. The torquing does not go away because those ligaments cannot move back to where they should be. So why is this pattern the same on so many people? I can't say for sure, but I suspect that it's because of these diaphragm tendons. So it raises the question, well, are these tendons the same on everybody? Does everybody have the right side going down to L3 and the left side going down to L2? I have a partial answer to that, because one of my colleagues, a massage therapist, Rachel Porpora, did a little study one day when she went down to we have a very interesting museum here in Chicago called the International Museum of Surgical Science. And in that museum, there are 31 cadavers that Rachel found. And the tendons, these two diaphragm tendons, were visible on 30 of the 31 cadavers. And in all cases, they were the same. All of them had L3 attachment on the right and L2 attachment on the left. Now, one question that we might ask is, Well, does it make any difference if people are right-handed or left-handed? Because, you know, we always wonder, why are some people right-handed, some people left-handed? Apparently, it is not because of these tendons. 10% of people are left-handed. So if handedness were related to these two tendons, we would expect that 3 out of the 30 cadavers would have had a longer tendon on the left. But that was not the case. I also have been watching in my clients to see what happens with my right-handed and left-handed patients. And again, I see no difference in the pattern between the right-handed and the left-handed people. The differences come from injury. The differences come from other things. They don't come from handedness. So we are going to take a little break at this point, because the next segment is going to be about the neck, and I'd like to talk about that all together rather than breaking it up. So we'll take a short break here from Rethinking Orthopedics, and when we come back, we'll look at how the pelvis affects the neck.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. The show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
Join Patricia Raskin, the host of Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com, Monday at 11 Pacific. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call to Positive Living, Mondays at 11 Pacific Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Rethinking Orthopedics with Mary J. Rogel. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please give us a call at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to rethinkingorthopedics@earthlink.net. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back. You're listening to Rethinking Orthopedics, and I'm your host, Mary Rogel. In this segment, we're going to talk about the neck. So I'd like you to scroll down to the next illustration, which is on page 4. Now, over the last several months, we've been talking about a number of different things that attach to the pelvis. So here is another set of muscles that start down at that foundation and then work their way up. It's not important for us to know the names of these muscles. What I'd like you to look at instead is the pattern. If we start down at the pelvis, we see there's this large white area down at the bottom. That's a big, huge tendon, and there are lots of muscles that attach to it. That's the tendon that the latissimus dorsi attaches to that I mentioned before. But I'd like you to look at how the muscles go up. And they go all the way from the lower body into the upper part of the thoracics, and then there are other muscles that take over and go on up into the neck. You also see that there are several diagonal muscles here attaching from the spine onto the ribs. And you get to see that everything is connected in layers. So if we take a look at what happens when we move, we can see how tilting of the pelvis, like when we lift up our legs, how it tilts the ilium backward. Look at all the things that attach onto the ilium and how they get pulled when the bone itself is moved. So we have things that are pulling on the ribs, things that are pulling on the lumbar, things that are pulling on the spine, things that are pulling on the arms. And this is what starts that torso rotating and arm swinging pattern that involves all parts of the body, including the neck and the head, even though we're not really aware of it most of the time. So here's what's happening on the back of the body. In the earlier part of this show, we looked at what was happening on the front side of the body so that when the legs are moved, we saw that there are things pulling on the front part of the lumbar, things that are pulling on the diaphragm, things that are pulling on the conduits that pass through the diaphragm. And if I could just put a thought in your head here, we talked about injury to the sacroiliac joints. Well, if there's injury and the body is not able to return itself to a neutral position, and we have these tendons of the diaphragm that are being affected by that, and there's this central tendon in the dome of the diaphragm where all these conduits come through, the aorta, the vena cava, the esophagus. If those can never go back to neutral, could that be a reason for some of our internal medicine problems like GERD, like hypertension, high blood pressure that medicines can't control? Maybe there's a mechanical reason behind some of these problems. So let's go on now and continue on up to the upper part of the body, because we can see by looking at the back, looking at the front, that there's a coordinated movement between the front and the back, and there's a coordinated movement between the lower body and the upper body. As I mentioned in one of the name of one of my earlier shows was As Below, So Above. This is the culmination of it. So if we turn now to the next illustration, we're going to start looking at what is going on in the neck. And the top picture you see of the person lying down on his back, those are the cervical vertebrae that you see poking down like that. What you're looking at is a side view. So that's what we call these projections that go down, the spinous processes. And you can feel those on yourself. Those are the bumps that you feel coming down your neck and going down your spine. It's the spinous processes. Another way of looking at them is the illustration that's just below it. You can see the 7 vertebrae of the cervical spine, and it's showing you the lengths, the relative length of the spinous processes. The two that are most important to us are C2 and C7. They're labeled in the upper illustration, and you can count them in the lower illustration, or just look, they are the two longest of those spinous processes. We're going to focus for a moment on C2. C7 is the one that we had we looked at in the previous segment of this show, where you saw all those long muscles coming up from below. Many of them attach in the area of C7 and some of them onto C7. So we want to look now at the neck, so we're going to look at C2. And if you scroll down to the lower illustrations on the page, I'd like you to look at the right-hand figure. This, again, it's a cutaway. So in this case, we've taken away the spinous processes. And what we're doing is we're looking at the inside of the spinal canal. The inside, we've taken away the spinal cord, taken away the spinous process, take away the spinal cord. And this is what you would see looking from the back of your body toward the front. I'm interested in these ligaments that one of them is in the shape of a cross. And you'll see it has labels here. It labels the different parts of it. But it's often called the cruciform ligament because it's in the shape of a cross. And behind that cross, there are two diagonal, shorter ligaments that are labeled the alar ligaments. These combined ligaments attach themselves from C2, C1, onto the skull. And what's important about this is they're strong ligaments. They're little, but they're strong. But what they do is they give the head the ability to balance the rest of what's going on in the body. If you think about the spine as a pole, only this pole is curved and it's flexible, which means that it can bend in all different positions, sort of, within limits. And at the top, we've got this ball that's balancing. Well, how do we keep that ball balanced and not falling off? These ligaments are part of that. They can't do it by themselves. They're too small to do it by themselves. But they're part of what is doing this. And I point them out to you because when there are problems in the head, notice how deep these ligaments are. And we know that ligaments are difficult to stretch. But if these get injured in any way, it's going to create problems. They're hard, as I said, they're hard to adjust. It can be done, but it begins to explain why sometimes we have problems that go on for a very, very long time. In spite of all the exercising that we do, in spite of the treatments that we have, sometimes it's very difficult. So let's take a look now at what C1 and C2 look like. In their whole form. So if you scroll down to page 6, the next page, we have two views of C1 and two views of C2. Now, these two vertebrae have special names that you may have heard about, the atlas and the axis. C1 is the atlas, C2 is the axis. These two vertebrae are unlike any other that are in the body. They, if you look at C1, you'll see that the top figure of it is showing you the spinous process. It's pointing to the left in this case. And the illustration just below it is a top view of C1. And you'll notice it's a different shape from most of the other vertebrae. It's a ring, and it has a different function from the rest of the vertebrae. Its function is to rotate from side to side. It doesn't flex, it doesn't extend, meaning it doesn't bend forward, it doesn't bend backward, and it doesn't bend to the sides. Its function is to rotate. It sits on top of C2, and C2 is what's in the lower part of the illustration on this page, and you'll see C2 has a special tooth-like projection coming up from the top of it. And that's where C1 sits around that, and there's a ligament that holds C1 to C2 so that it can rotate. And this C1 is what attaches our heads to our necks, basically. If you can notice on the top of C1, especially on that upper illustration, you can see there are little bumps at the top of C1. Those little bumps, those little projections, fit into depressions that are on the bottom of the skull. And this is what people are talking about when they mention the atlanto-occipital joint, the AO. You may have heard of that. The AO is the atlanto-occipital joint, and it is the place where these little projections from C1 fit into the depressions that are in the occiput. We're going to look at that, at the occiput, in the next segment of this show. So you'll actually see where that fits in. Go ahead and scroll down to page 7 and take a look at it right now. Page 7, I have two illustrations there of the bottom of the skull. The hole in the center is where the spinal cord goes through to the brain. It's a little hard to tell on these illustrations because it's not labeled, but on the sides beside that hole, where you can imagine C1 is sitting, because C1 is a ring, and the ring is going to fit around that hole. The projections on C1 fit into the depressions that are under the bottom of that occiput. And if you look to the illustration to the right, it's a little bit bigger, and you can see the depression a little bit better. But you notice how shallow these are and what a small projection we're talking about. So when people talk about having atlanto-occipital problems, AO joint problems, it's easy to see why. Because you have this heavy object sitting on top of a flexible pole. The heavy object's part of its function is to balance, because if your head bends forward too much, you're going to topple forward and you have to use a cane to prevent yourself from falling. So the head is constructed in a way that we should be able to walk and we should be able to balance without that kind of assistance, except when there are injuries, especially from down below. So having the AO joints there is actually a safety valve of sorts, because if the head has to shift too much in order to balance the problems that are going on down below, you can see that the projection is going to come out of the depression, or at least it's going to snug up bone to bone. And when we start looking at all the ligaments and all the attachments that are up in that area, we can see how it could possibly get stuck. So the thought I want to leave you with before break is that whatever affects the neck has a major influence on how the head balances on the top of the neck. And we know that what happens below, farther down in the body, has a direct effect on the neck. So we're going to take a short break at this point. When we come back, we're going to tie it all together and proceed on to the end of the line of adaptation. This is Rethinking Orthopedics, and we'll be right back.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Now there's a new destination for video content, VoiceAmerica.tv. Just like our radio channels and so much more. Voice America Variety, Health and Wellness, Business, Sports, Green Talk, Power Up Motorsports, and Seventh Wave Network now have their own video channel components. Plus, check out exclusive programming, including movies, music, educational courses, science and history, current events, and short features. High-definition, premier-quality programs available 24-7. VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Step by step, you made it through the journey of pregnancy. Now your baby is in your arms and you're on the cusp of a new journey, breastfeeding. As a new parent, you receive a lot of advice, much of it conflicting, some of it outdated. Tune into Born to be Breastfed with host Marie Biancuso to bust through the myths about feeding your baby. Marie and her guests will help you figure out what you can expect and put you on the best and surest path on your breastfeeding journey. Listen every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Rethinking Orthopedics with Mary J. Rogel. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please give us a call at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to rethinkingorthopedics@earthlink.net. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to Rethinking Orthopedics. I'm your host, Mary Rogel. And we've been talking this evening about the upper body, the torso, the neck, and the head. It's time now to bring all the threads together and follow them to their conclusion. So let's pick up where we left off on page 7 of the illustrations. We were looking at the bottom of the head. And I'd like to call your attention to the figure on the right-hand side of the page where you can see cutaways, again, of muscles that are coming from below and attaching onto the bottom of the skull. We're looking at the underside of the occiput, and there are 8 different muscles there that that are pulling on that one section of the head. It happens on the other side of the head as well. So we've got 2 sets of 8 muscles pulling that back of the head to, as part of the balance mechanism and just part of the walking mechanism as well. If you scroll down, we have a different view now of those muscles. Some of them are in place, and we can see that some of those muscles attach onto C1. Some of them attach onto C2. This is what I was saying about how those little ligaments on the inside of the spinal column have some help in how they balance the head and in how the head moves. I'd like you to keep this figure in mind with all those connections coming from the head to C1 and C2. And scroll down then to the next page, 8, where we are taking a look at a very interesting and different muscle. This muscle is the levator scapula, and you will notice that it attaches to the 4 upper vertebrae of the neck. So it attaches to C1, 2, 3, and 4, and the other end of it is on the scapula. Now, I bring this to your attention because the neck and the shoulder have a very interesting relationship. There's no way that we can fix the shoulder without paying attention to the neck, and there's no way we can fix the neck without paying attention to the shoulder. This is part of the reason. We saw the diagram above where all the connections from the head are coming down to C1 and C2. And now we see that there's another muscle that attaches C1, 2, 3, and 4 and goes to the scapula. As we saw in an earlier show, and I mentioned it also earlier in this show, that the latissimus dorsi comes up and attaches itself to the upper arm. So as we walk, the latissimus dorsi pulls on the upper arm. When the arm is pulled, it also pulls on the scapula, which means that the pulling on the scapula is going to affect the upper cervical vertebrae, and anything that affects the cervical vertebrae is also going to affect the head. So now we can see the connections that are happening here. And if you'd like to see what it looks like on a person to have all these things being pulled, before we look at the person, I want to call one other fact to your attention on this diagram of the levator scapula. If you look at C1, the one at the top, and you see there's a strand of the levator that attaches to C1, follow it down. It attaches to the scapula at the lowest point where that muscle attaches. C2 and 3 in the middle, and C4 attaches to the upper part of that. That means that this muscle twists. And so when the arm pulls on the scapula and the scapula pulls on the neck here, you can see that it's not only rotating the vertebrae, but it's pulling on C1 in a different way from the way it pulls on C4. And so it's side bending the head at the same time that it's pulling and rotating on the neck itself. So now, if you scroll down to the photo, I put a photo below that illustration. This is a photo of a person who is having what I've been describing to you. You see what looks like his right shoulder being elevated. Well, look at the levator scapula. His levator scapula is contracted, and it's pulling, I mean, his scapula is pulled up and his head is side bent, and you can see a little bit of rotation in his neck by looking at the folds in the skin. The left shoulder looks like it's sloping, but really what's happening is the levator scapula on that side is being stretched because we've got opposite actions occurring on the two sides of the body. So when one levator scapula is contracted, the other one stretches. If they both contract at the same time, it's very, very painful. So we want this, that as one contracts, the other stretches. And if you notice the ears too, the right ear is tilted toward the right shoulder, and it appears to be lower than the ear on the left. So when we look at this, remember that this man is sitting down. He's not walking, but his whole upper body is in the position as though he were walking. We also want to think now what's happening at the base of his skull. If you look at where C1 meets the skull, and remember there are those little projections of C1 that go up into the depressions under the underside of the occiput, well, there's an awful lot of pressure going on up there because that right side never fully releases. So it's going to have a great effect not only on his head, but on anything that's attached to the head. And that's where we're going now, because we're almost to the end of the line. This constant torque is going to have an effect on the shape of the skull in some subtle ways, and on some people it's not very subtle. If you stand behind someone while they're lying down and put your hands underneath the skull and feel, in, especially in a person who has this problem like this man has, you can feel that the head is constantly torqued. It does not relax by itself. So scroll down now to page 9, and we're going to look at the implications of that. You see that the muscles going down this figure's neck and attaching onto the skull, and we've talked about the levator scapula is in here. You just can't see it very well. But look at all those different muscles and think about the rib cage being rotated. Think about what's going on to the back of this skull. And look at the muscle that is on the side of this face. Now, that muscle is called the temporal muscle. And if you scroll down the page, you can see that temporal muscle attaches to the jaw. This muscle, its function is to close the lower jaw. So if we have a person whose head is tilted all the time, and that tilting is affecting the jaw because the jaw hangs from the skull by 2 points. And you can see the point in these lower figures. It's called what you often call the TMJ, the temporomandibular joint. That's where the jaw hangs. And as you can see it there, if you can imagine that the head is tilted and the jaw is hanging on those 2 points, it is not going to be hanging straight. And if you scroll down to the next page, you can see the inner workings of the TMJ. We're not going to go into them in detail, but I wanted you to see what those look like, how complex it is, and how the jaw can hang, and how it can be that it's not symmetrical. So here we can begin to see why we have problems, TMJ problems that are very difficult to go away, because if the head never straightens out, the jaw can never hang straight. If you look behind the jaw here, you see there's a little hole behind there. It's labeled the external auditory meatus. Well, what that means is that's the ear. That's the ear canal. And so if the jaw is being pulled toward the ear, there are all kinds of things going on in the inside. It puts pressure on the ear. There are nerves and things that go in there. There are canals, and pressure from the jaw can change what's happening in those canals. And we begin to see then why we might have problems like tinnitus, which is ringing in the ears. And I take you to the last step here. Scroll down and you see the teeth. The teeth also have ligaments. We know the teeth in the mouth move because we move them on purpose with braces, but they also move. We break them because they have shifted and the pressures are uneven. So the teeth actually are the end of the line for the adaptation that happens from down below. So we've reached the end of the line of adaptation, and we've also reached the end of the of this 13-week pilot for Rethinking Orthopedics. I hope you found the information interesting and useful, because I've certainly enjoyed sharing it with you. We'll keep you informed about future plans for the show, and you can always send me an email at rethinkingorthopedics@earthlink.net or come to my website, www.eastpointassociates.com. I want to thank all the people at Voice America who have made this pilot possible, including the production staff and engineers, host services, and especially my executive producer, Nicole Marshall, and my engineer for today, Michael Sergette. This is Rethinking Orthopedics, and I am Mary Rogel. Good evening.
Thank you again for tuning in this week. Mary Rogel will be back with another edition of Rethinking Orthopedics next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until then, may you focus on great health.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.